Good afternoon. Once again, iMagnum Company, fashion leaders in America, San Francisco and Los Angeles, bring you Palace Personalities, an informal transcribed party call in your own home. We'd like to be your guests for half an hour, and we'd like to bring our guests into your own home for a visit with you. Now, our guests are gathered here in the lovely new Palace Corner, the beautiful lounge in San Francisco's historic Palace Hotel. And they've come here from every part of the world. Interesting personalities, colorful figures in the life of the day. Your guests for this afternoon's visit will be Miss Mildred Wong, first. And when I say from all parts of the globe, that's just what I mean, because Miss Wong has come to us from across the sea in Honolulu, where she was the winner of a beauty contest. Really, Miss China of Honolulu, and she is in California to see two of the New Year's football games, the one in San Francisco, the East-West game, and the one in Los Angeles, Pasadena, the Rose Bowl game. We'll talk with Miss Wong in just a moment. We're going to talk to Mr. Arthur Stewart, artist who has done some really outstanding work, which he will tell us about. And we're going to talk to a very charming young lady whose name is Lucille Bliss. She is a movie voice, which is an unusual occupation for a woman. But while we're talking about women, I do have just one thought, because somebody said that when a woman wants to look her loveliest, every night is New Year's Eve. In any case, tonight really is New Year's Eve. And, of course, every woman wants to look her loveliest every night. So no matter what night it is, New Year's Eve or plain old Monday, you can look really your loveliest if you let Charles of the Ritz help you. Now, I'd like to suggest that you visit the Charles of the Ritz salons at iMagnum & Company, either in San Francisco or Los Angeles. You'll find there everything that you can imagine to make you your most beautiful, glamorous best. And you'll enjoy meeting the artists who guide you to beauty. And I say artists advisedly because that's just what they are. It takes long training and a real artistic skill, you know, to understand as thoroughly as they do the way to help you to beauty. So come to the Charles of the Ritz salons at iMagnum & Company in San Francisco at Union Square. In Los Angeles, iMagnum & Company, Wilshire at New Hampshire. Now, Miss Mildred Wong, and of course it's always a great and wonderful pleasure to talk to a beauty winner. Miss Wong, I congratulate you and concur with the decision of the judges. A really great beauty from Honolulu. Welcome to San Francisco.
Thank you.
You've been here just a short time, and I know that you're rushing and tearing. You've been to the East-West game today, the Shrine game, and you're on your way south to Los Angeles for the Rose Bowl game in Pasadena when day after tomorrow, isn't it?
That's right.
Must be a thrill to come really across the ocean and to look around you and actually see the things that are different from at home. What do you do when you're in Honolulu, Ms. Wong?
Oh, I do lots of things. Go to swimming, movies, go to school.
I'll bet you anything that coming from the islands gives you a chance to do some international relations in a sort of a way. So perhaps you can give us some kind of an idea of what life is like in Honolulu. Now, with you today, I notice there are, what, 10, 15 girls, all with lovely, colorful flower leis from the islands. Did they come with you on the trip?
That's right. We received them from people who gave them to us at the airport.
The leis came with you, but not the girls, is that right?
The girls did, too.
Oh, they did. They're all from Honolulu.
That's right. All are from Honolulu.
Honolulu is a wonderful, tropical, beautiful, magnificent, flower-laden island, or a city on an island, isn't it?
Yes.
Have you lived there all your life?
I have.
Went to school there?
I went to school.
What part of the island do you live, Ms. Wong?
I live in Honolulu.
Right in the city proper?
That's right.
But there are other islands in the Hawaiian group that make...
They are, let's see, the island of Hawaii,
yes.
Maui, Kauai,
mm-hmm.
Molokai, Lanai,
Kau.
And Oahu.
And Oahu, where Honolulu is. And what's the little tiny one with the long name?
Ko'olawe.
Ko'olawe, that's right. Maui is an island where I think lots of residents of Honolulu probably go, don't they, for vacations and summer and so on.
That's right.
Of course, there's that beautiful new ranch there, the Hana Maui, isn't there?
That's right.
New hotel and beautiful, beautiful spot that's just been built. Of course, I'm in favor of Honolulu. I think it's the most beautiful spot in the world. Tell me something about your dress, though, that you have on today, Miss Wong.
Well, I went to several parties after I won the title.
Yes.
And,
it's a beautiful dress.
I call it my queen's gown.
Your queen's gown. It's a Chinese dress, isn't it?
That's right.
Is it a traditional gown of some sort? Or is it a modern adaptation of a Chinese dress?
No, it isn't. It's modern.
Modern. It certainly is beautiful, just as you are. And it's
Thank you.
Really lots and lots of fun to have you with us, and we certainly do appreciate it. A gift for you from Charles of the Ritz, a lovely lipstick, which I'd like you to have from Charles of the Ritz.
Well, thank you ever so much.
Some flowers, besides the fact that you have lovely orchids and a beautiful lei from Hawaii, we would like you to have some wonderful flowers from America as well. Some camellias from this part of the world.
Thank you very much.
So nice to have you with us. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Miss Mildred Wong, the lovely, lovely young lady from Honolulu. You know, when you visit Charles of the Ritz, the salon at I. Magnin & Company in San Francisco or Los Angeles, you'll have the advantage of Charles of the Ritz's miraculous new ingredient, Revanescence. Have a Revanescence facial. No matter how little time you have to spend, Charles of the Ritz has a facial just designed for you. Now, there's the Siesta facial, which takes just a half an hour, and the complete Revanescence treatments, which you can enjoy in an hour or an hour and a half, depending on how much time you have to spend. And then, when you're finished, you'll have the joy of knowing that you look your very best. And besides, you'll feel so fresh. You'll really enjoy those luxurious treatment rooms and the wonderful, courteous service that's yours at Charles of the Ritz. Visit the salons in either of the I. Magnin & Company stores, in San Francisco at Union Square, in Los Angeles, Wilshire at New Hampshire. Now, it's my pleasure to have a chat with Arthur Stewart, who is, as I told you, a painter. Arthur, you have an exhibit right now which includes oils, watercolors, portraits, lots of things, haven't you?
That's right.
Now, it's unusual, isn't it, for an artist to work in so many mediums?
Well, it's really not unusual.
Which do you prefer, then?
I like them both. I like them all.
You like oil, watercolor? What else? Wash, do you do any...
I do a lot of wash drawings. I do gouache and watercolor, oil.
Well, let's stop at gouache for a moment. Wash and gouache sound a lot alike, and they're not a bit alike when you come right to it, are they?
No.
Tell us something about the difference, will you?
Well, wash is one color, usually.
Mm-hmm.
And gouache is a combination of watercolor and opaque white.
And how does that differ from tempera?
Well, tempera, in the original sense, is an emulsion of egg and pigment.
I ask this question, of course.
Which is painted on wet plaster.
Yes. I ask it for a reason, because we have in California a really great artist, most of the time he's in California at least. His name is Diego Rivera.
Yes.
Who does a great deal of tempera work.
Well, his is egg tempera, and it's that of which I was speaking, which is painted on wet plaster.
I see, and lasts indefinitely as long as the plaster, presumably, because the color becomes impregnated into the wall, is that it?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Do you do any of that?
No.
We're sticking, then, strictly to painting, putting color on top of something, which gives you a different kind of a feeling and a different mood.
Yeah, well, it gives you a very transparent thing, and it's watercolors, particularly, have a very spontaneous quality and a freshness that you can't get in tempera painting.
Mm-hmm. Watercolor, however, is a little more perishable, isn't it?
Not necessarily. Yes, it is. Great deal more.
It would fade, wouldn't last, let's say.
Tempera paintings will last for hundreds and even possibly thousands of years.
Well, now, what about the paintings from the old masters that we recognize, that we see, the Michelangelos, the Da Vincis, the Raphaels? Those were, of course, hundreds of years ago. How is it that they've lasted all this time?
Well, oil painting, which was invented in the 15th century by the Dutch artists. It was first practiced in Italy. Now, you've mentioned only Italian artists for some reason.
They're probably the best known in America. Perhaps
that's right.
Why.
That's right. But the first of the Italian artists...
I can do better than that. I can mention Van Gogh. I can
use art painting.
El Greco, go ahead.
And Da Vinci.
Da Vinci.
And he mixed it with tempera painting, incidentally.
He
and
did.
That's why his famous Last Supper has fallen off, because he wasn't familiar with the technique.
His Last Supper has fallen off.
Yeah, it's just fallen off the wall.
Oh, I see.
He combined it, tempera painting with oil painting, and it wasn't successful.
Has it been since? Has there been a technique developed since that makes it so?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because that's probably the one place in the world that the great master fell down at all, isn't it?
Yes, I think that's the most notable example.
I'm sure. Tell me something about the work that you've done. The paintings that you have on display right now at where Graves Gallery, isn't it?
That's right, at the Graves Gallery on Sutter Street.
Those paintings were made in Europe when, last year?
They were made there last year, yes. And most of them were made in Paris, all the Paris, all the old quarters, the Latin Quarter, and the, let's say, Montmartre and Montparnasse.
Mm-hmm.
And a few along the river.
What are they about? What are their subjects?
Oh, well, they're mostly old buildings, which fascinate me.
Buildings?
Yes, with a lot of people. A liberal sprinkling of nuns and
we've had
terrible costumes.
The great pleasure on this program in the past, from one time to another, of chatting with architects who told us about buildings. Now you're telling us about painting buildings. It's a different thing. They are concerned with building them, making the buildings. You're concerned with interpreting what they look like to you. Does it put a responsibility on you that the architect might have a different feeling?
No, because I studied architecture.
Oh.
When I first began. And I turned to painting later. And so I'm quite familiar with the architectural aspects of architect might be interested in.
Must be wonderful to go to Paris or any other city, but you're speaking of Paris now, and look around the city, be able to set down in color and line your feelings for the buildings of Paris.
Well, it is pretty fascinating, but I tell you, the most fascinating thing to me, Len, was the parks of Paris. I painted a great deal in the Tuileries Gardens.
Yes.
Which are right off the Place Vendôme, the very fashionable section where all the finest dressmakers have their shops.
Surely.
The salons. And the great avenues with the beautiful clipped trees, everything in order.
Clipped trees and clipped joints. Paris has changed now, hasn't it?
Well, I doubt if it's changed a great deal. There's just more of it.
I don't know. I don't suppose Paris will ever change. It's a city that started, grew, developed, and is now the wonderful glamour capital of the world. Everyone knows and loves and respects and admires Paris.
Well, it's a beautiful lady of the city.
I'm sure. Now then, we were talking about oils and watercolors, about Paris. I have a hunch, however, which is a bad word, but I'm told that you do portraits as well. That brings me to a favorite type subject.
All right, what's that?
Portrait painters astound me. First of all, being able to get a likeness, why not take a photograph, either in color or black and white, makes no difference. You're able to capture something else that's not obtainable with a photograph?
I hope you say that. That's it.
You are?
Yes. At least photographers tell me that. They tell me they envy me.
Why?
Because they catch a very momentary thing about a person, and a portrait painter painting over a couple of weeks catches much more than a momentary thing, naturally.
Better than you should be acquainted with your subject, know him intimately well, know all the expressions in order to recognize what you want to paint?
Yes, you get the most characteristic expression and gesture after knowing them.
I'm sure. What sort of people do you prefer to paint? I ask this because
I like to, I don't know, Len, I like to paint so many kinds of people that it's hard to
paint
my favorite. I like to paint children, I like to paint very old people, and I like to paint beautiful young girls, naturally.
Yes. I understand in this show you have some beautiful young girls.
Yes, I do.
Portraits. Everyone naturally likes to paint beautiful things, beautiful people. That is to be expected. We're always reminded when we talk to painters, you, I'm sure, are reminded when you talk to your subjects that the portrait is supposed to look like the person.
Yes.
That's a mechanical device, isn't it?
What is a mechanical device?
Making a picture look like the person you're painting is purely mechanical.
No, it's psychic.
It is? How so?
Well, it's
An eye is just so far from another eye.
It's a mystical thing between the artist and the person who's being painted.
Well, I mean, a camera, which isn't psychical at all, manages to capture a likeness.
But, you see, people are not mechanical.
Mm-hmm. And that's the reason.
It's only the highest trained people who are mechanical.
That becomes then the reason that it's possible for a painter to capture more than just the camera.
That's true.
That was what I was working to.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Arthur Stewart. Lots of fun having you with us. A great pleasure to see you. Thanks a lot for joining us. I know the show is going to be a great and wonderful success. When you visit the Charles of the Ritz Salon, not you, Arthur Stewart, but when you, Mrs. Los Angeles and San Francisco, when you visit the Charles of the Ritz Salon at I. Magnin & Company in San Francisco or Los Angeles, you'll have the advantage of Charles of the Ritz's miraculous new ingredient, Revanescence. Now that we've told you. There is also another thing when you visit Charles of the Ritz. And that means hairstyling, because right now, hairstyling, to a great many people, is important. There is a new hairstyle in. So let the skilled artists at Charles of the Ritz give you a new hairdo. Charles of the Ritz salons are located at I. Magnin and Company in San Francisco and Los Angeles. When you want a new hairline, and new lines and head fashions are in right now, you can't do better than to come to Charles of the Ritz. If you live in San Francisco, I'd like you to call Miss Mary Bosse at the Charles of the Ritz salon at I. Magnin and Company. In Los Angeles, I'd like you to talk with Miss Louisa Rickard. You'll enjoy meeting them, and they can give you such valuable advice you'll thank me for suggesting them. And of course, there's no obligation. Just come to the salon and let Miss Rickard or Miss Bosse show you the lovely treatment and hairstyling rooms. Oh, you've never seen such elegance and luxury. Let them show you what they can do with your hair. You'll be fascinated. That's Charles of the Ritz Salon at I. Magnin and Company in San Francisco at Union Square, in Los Angeles, Wilshire at New Hampshire. Now, a very, very great pleasure to talk to an old microphone friend of mine, Mrs. Nyan Tucker.
Thank you, Len.
How are you? It's nice to see you again. We were talking about France a moment ago, and the word cotillion came up. Mrs. Tucker, of course, is the guiding spirit of the San Francisco cotillions. They started in France, didn't they?
Yes, they started in France. That's why the name is really a French name. But there were cotillion dances held in Vienna and in Rome and in London. In fact, throughout Europe in the great centers for many years.
Tell me something about the cotillions that we will have in California now, this season.
Well, I might say they're sort of an outgrowth of the old idea, but not exactly the same thing. In the old days, a cotillion was really a group of chosen young people, not too large.
Mm-hmm.
They met and rehearsed for days beforehand. They knew exactly what figures they were going to dance. And then the night of the cotillion, with each set, as they called it, was given a physically charming favor. Well, that is not exactly right. They're giving a great many favors. The first time, perhaps a paper favor, a lei or a hat or something like that. The next time, perhaps pretty handkerchiefs or a boutonniere for the man.
Mm-hmm.
And then once during the course of the evening, there'd be a very handsome favor given. Perhaps the girls would get gold vanity cases and the men gold cigarette cases.
Uh-huh.
Needless to say, Len, we're not doing that these days.
No, sir.
Those
sure
were
not.
Usually private parties. In fact, they were almost always private parties.
Now what will be the
Well, now it's become a practice to just have the cotillion danced by the debutantes of the year.
Yes.
Seeing as we have about 1,000 people come to the party, we couldn't have 1,000 people dancing a cotillion.
I should say not.
It's just too confusing. So we limit it to just the girls that are going to be presented each year.
We
try to keep that number in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 and not more if possible.
It sounds like a perfectly beautiful dance. When will it be?
Tomorrow night. In fact, we're rehearsing it now.
Isn't that wonderful? You've just, I know, come from the rehearsal of the
yes.
of the cotillion, and Mrs. Tucker was terribly nice to stop by because I did want to chat with her about it. Mrs. Nyan Tucker, as you probably know, has been not just active, but excessively active, beautifully active in San Francisco and in California, up and down this coast in the wonderful work that she's done. We first met, I think you were in charge of the AWVS, Mrs.
Yes,
Tucker.
I was at that time, Len, and you were very nice to us. I remember with gratitude.
Not at all. It was so wonderful to work with you. Now your really boundless energies are turned into what channel, besides the cotillion?
Oh, the Rehabilitation Center, and the Guide Dogs for the Blind, and the
mm-hmm.
San Francisco Youth Association, and the AWVS of the State and City, and the San Francisco Museum of Art, and the Cotillion Club, incidentally, occasionally, and about 8 others. I won't list them all.
I don't suppose that you really have time to do one single thing about taking care of your own private life. How did you fare through?
None, except in the hours of 3 and 5 a.m.
How did you fare through the holiday season, Mrs. Tucker?
I've hardly gotten through, thank you, Len. I'm tottering.
Absolutely tottering. New Year's coming up, Christmas just passed.
And cotillion in the middle.
Cotillion right in the middle, exactly.
Yes.
So it's wonderful to chat with you. You're so nice to stop by our microphone and say hello.
I was delighted to see an old friend. Thank
you,
Len.
Thanks so
much. And a happy new year to you.
Thank you, and the same to you. A gift for you from Charles of the Ritz before you go.
Thank you.
Some flowers.
Please give them my thanks also.
I should say so. Some flowers from Podesta Baldacci.
Oh, I have several people to thank. Will you add my thanks to them?
I most certainly will. Our thanks to you, Mrs. Tucker.
Thank you, Len.
Always nice to see you. Good night. I'd like you to meet now a charming young lady. A charming young lady who, when you see her on the screen, or should I say hear her on the screen, won't be charming at all. She's an evil, wicked sister in the Walt Disney production of Cinderella. Her name, between you and me, is Lucille Bliss. Lucille is an old friend of mine, a wonderful old friend of radio audiences up and down the coast of California. Her movie role right now as, what is the name?
Anastasia, the wicked stepsister.
In Cinderella.
That's right.
What about Cinderella, Lucille? It's due out, the big Disney production, when soon, isn't it?
Very soon, Len. It's due out, I'd say, in February or March. And it's really so breathtakingly beautiful that anything I'd say would just be superlative that one runs out of. I mean, I just don't have any words.
Cinderella is a favorite story. How did you feel when they cast you as the wicked stepsister?
Oh, I was very privileged. It was quite a surprise, Len.
How did it happen, Lucille?
Well, I happened to hear about they were auditioning for Cinderella and the different parts, and I went down the studio. That was over a year ago now. And when I got down there, there was no script written as yet. So one of the casting directors said to me, well, I have some things in mind. If you come up with something that might fit one of the parts, we'd be only too happy to use you. Otherwise, it's a wonderful experience.
To audition.
So with my heart pounding even louder than it is right now.
And you don't need experience in auditions, Lucille, any more than any of us do.
You're very sweet. Well, anyway, with no script and some very clear ideas which he told me about, I did what I hoped was an adequate job. And about 6 months later, I got a call if I would come down to do Anastasia, the wicked stepsister.
I guess you did what would be called an adequate job. It's wonderful, isn't it, Lucille, when they take you in and they say, all right, talk.
Yes. And you can't think of anything to say.
It's awful. It's the most unfair kind of an audition. Supposing I said to you right now, for instance, we'll have an audition.
Then.
We'll have an audition for an Olivia de Havilland part. In a new movie. Miss de Havilland has turned the part down. The movie is called Hail the TV Future. Go ahead and audition.
Mr. Curly.
I asked you the question.
That is really something.
I asked you the question because I know you've been doing a lot of television work.
That's right. I'm doing a television series now. May I mention names?
Certainly.
Well, it's called Crusader Rabbit. It's a cartoon TV, a daily strip, and...
I have seen Crusader Rabbit. I saw him get into one of the most difficult situations. As I remember, Crusader Rabbit was having some trouble with some people who were stealing carrots.
That's right.
Yes.
And being in the television strip, Crusader Rabbit, I know just how I felt right then.
Who are you? Are you the rabbit?
I'm the rabbit.
Oh, you are?
Crusader Rabbit, yeah.
My heavens.
Quite a
Lucille.
Jump from a wicked stepsister to a rabbit, isn't it?
It certainly is, Lucille. I forgot to mention when I introduced this charming young lady that she is one of the most versatile actresses in all of television, radio, and motion pictures.
Thank you, Mr. Curley.
Just as a hint about how versatile Lucille Bliss actually is, what does the wicked stepsister Anastasia sound like in Cinderella, Lucille?
Well, I think perhaps the sound of her voice calling as the picture opens, which goes something like this. Cinderella! Cinderella! I think that might just sort of give you the idea.
She's a charmer.
Sweet.
Just
oh,
a charmer.
Oh, she's a doll.
Which one of the wicked sisters? As I remember my fairy story version of Cinderella, there were two wicked stepsisters. Which one is Anastasia?
Anastasia is the, should I say, henna redhead in the picture.
Oh.
The one that mother's hope, who never comes through, and Drusilla is the other sister.
I see. Now, I was in Hollywood about 2 weeks ago, and I had a tour myself. I was there on business and was chatting with some of the people at the Disney Studios, and I met some of the characters in Cinderella. A couple of the mice.
Oh, yeah.
They have mice.
They do, very much so.
Yes.
Jacques and Gus Gus.
Gus Gus? Two Gus's?
Gus Gus. No, that's one little Gus. But
<I see. laughs>
when you see him, you know why they call him Gus Gus.
Is he a big fat mouse?
He's a little fat mouse. He's just an adorable mouse. He steals the pictures. And Eileen Woods, who plays Cinderella, well, she's every bit as charming in real life as she is in the picture. You just adore her. And she has just the right and lovely voice for the role.
It's wonderful. Lucille, you know there are some technical questions which everybody's dying to have me ask you about Cinderella right now.
Oh, I hope I can answer them.
Well, no, they're only in regards to your own work. And that is, how do you make your voice come out with the... with the faces on the screen? How does it look like Cinderella, the Wicked Sister, and so on, are actually talking in your voices?
Well, it's quite a long process. We I briefed first in a story conference, and I hope I'm not divulging any secrets.
Oh, I'm sure you're not. Walt's pretty nice about these things and tells everybody.
Oh, fine. Well, anyway, we see the drawings, and then the voice is recorded line by line.
Yes.
After that, it goes to the animation department, and live action is put in. In the records are played back, and the parties memorize the lines.
Mm-hmm.
And as they speak, the expressions are drawn by hundreds or perhaps thousands of animators. And
golly.
It's really a reverse process. First the voice, and then the action.
First the voice.
First the voice.
You know, it makes quite a responsibility on an actress, I should think. It's very difficult to continue a mood or an emotion when you are doing it line by line, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But it's a lot of fun. We were so thoroughly briefed with it. I mean, every time we met, we called each other by our storybook names.
No, really?
Honestly. Incidentally, Verna Felton is the fairy godmother.
Verna Felton has been in other Disney pictures, hasn't she?
That's right. And she's coming out in another one, in Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland. A wonderful story of a tremendous fairy book, fairy tale type character, which I think, if I remember rightly, Alice in Wonderland was made into a movie with living people, wasn't it?
I think it was, yes, ma'am.
I have an idea that the fantasy and the suggestion of that magnificent story of Lewis Carroll's will probably be told better by Walt Disney's animated cartoons, don't you think?
I really do.
Lucille.
Mr. Disney is a genius for that sort of thing.
Yes, he certainly is. And Lucille, I think you are, too.
Oh.
For being able to walk into an absolutely new field. Something
it is.
That,
it's completely new.
It isn't radio acting. It's nothing that you've ever done before.
No, it isn't.
We're going to be very, very interested in hearing you and finding out exactly how you go about it.
Well, thank you very much, Lynn.
Lucille, it's so nice to have you with us,
well,
as always, of course.
May I say before I go that I wish everyone a happy new year, and I hope for you, Lynn, this is your best year ever.
Thank you, Lucille, and I know that it's going to be your best year ever. February or March of this next 1950 is going to see the Walt Disney production of Cinderella and bring a new star into animated cartoons, her name Lucille Bliss. Thank you so much.
Ed, and Happy New Year. Come early.
Thanks so much, Lucille. A gift from Charles of the Ritz.
Oh, how wonderful.
A corsage from Podesta Baldacci.
Oh,
some lovely carnations.
Thanks again.
Thanks so much for being with us. Just one suggestion before it's time to go. Lucille, you know, was talking about the red-haired stepsister, the horrible henna job. Well, let me say something about hair. As regards Charles of the Ritz, your hair, you know, when it isn't exactly the color that it was last week, can be more beautiful. Let's say it can be more beautiful next year with cosmetic care to enhance its natural color or to conceal premature gray when it's done right at Charles of the Ritz. Or if you want to be daring and try a completely new shade, you can do that at Charles of the Ritz, too. So no matter what, you'll be thrilled with the softness, the luster, and the beautiful color blend at Charles of the Ritz. See their color analyst. They have a wide range of lovely colors, and the analyst takes into consideration the mode of dressing, the natural color tone of the hair, and so on. So they can either change your hair coloring or create a special new shade. So come to Charles of the Ritz Salon at iMagnon & Company in San Francisco and Los Angeles and talk it over. iMagnon & Company, Union Square in San Francisco, Wilshire, New Hampshire in Los Angeles. I'm afraid our time is gone. Our party call is over for today. We'll be back with another transcribed program next week at this same time, brought to you by iMagnon & Company and Charles of the Ritz. Until then, this is Len Curley saying thank you for listening and Happy New Year.